Brandon, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it. It's great to have you here with us.
Yeah, hey, guys. How's it going?
We are all doing well here, and the city of Toronto awaits an opportunity to talk to you, but I'm going to go first. And just to talk, to start off talking about the year, you know, people, I guess, went into this spring seeing you and Ricky Romero and Brett Cecil and Kyle Drabek, and they expected great things. All started, all four of them, all four of you, to take this giant leap forward, build on what you did last year, and become, I guess, the finished product, which is still very much a work in progress. But when you look at your year that you had, career high in wins with 11, career high in innings pitched, career low in hits allowed per nine innings, career low in walks allowed per nine innings, career low in whip in a qualifying year when you were a starter and not a reliever, in almost every category across the board, you had a better year than you had last year, but I think most people walk away thinking still could have been better. Where do you sit?
Well, I think it's just another step forward. You know, it's always a building process and learning, and, you know, a lot of people forget that that's just my second full season, you know, starting as a professional, really. You know, most people get more, you know, almost twice as many starts in the minor leagues as I've had, you know, professionally, which have almost all been in the major leagues. So, you know, still building and looking at all those kind of stats, I was definitely happy with that, cutting down the walks and still being able to keep my strikeouts in line with where they've been. And, you know, I thought that, you know, there's a couple games that if I could have done a better job getting out of some damage, then my overall numbers would have looked a lot better. But, you know, I think it was a pretty solid year. I wouldn't say, you know, definitely was great and obviously not what I think that I can do in the future or, you know, what I'll expect myself to do. But, you know, I think it was definitely just, you know, pretty solid, I would say.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And you finish with a flourish. I mean, your last, those two starts against the Yankees and Rays at the end of the year, and then the White Sox started on the final day of the season, was your high watermark in walks for the year, but you still managed to pitch out of trouble enough that you only gave up two runs over six innings. So after a couple of rough starts against the Red Sox, you really did seem to finish strong.
Right, yeah, and I went through that rough stretch in August, and, you know, I just kept saying I'm going to try and finish strong, and even though I said that for a couple of weeks and you know, faced some tough teams and didn't really pitch all that well, but, you know, I still kept going and finished strong. I don't think, you know, I wasn't fatiguing or anything, so that's always a good sign, getting stronger. I was finished healthy, so, you know, those are all good signs.
Yeah, definitely. In your last three starts, you held the opposition to a batting average of 157, so that's pretty impressive right there, considering the Yankees and the Rays, two playoff teams, were two of your opponents. Something that jumps out at me as unusual, I think, and I don't know if it's unusual for you specifically, it seems to be a little bit, but you murdered left-handed batters this year. It's not like righties had their way with you, but you just destroyed lefties. They hit 220, 291 on base, a 350 slugging. Is there anything you can attribute that to?
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'd always kind of struggled with lefties in the past, and I think the development of my slider has really helped me take a step forward in that aspect, that when I'm able to throw the fastball inside and then throw the slider off that, it's really been effective for me against the left-handers. And then I've been able to, you know, throw the fastball away to them. That was kind of my safety zone really all year to them. And then, you know, like I said, the slider was really good for me.
We are with Brandon Morrow, 11-game winner for the Blue Jays this year, and we're taking your phone calls and your tweets. You can hit me up at Wilderness590. I've always got an eye on the Twitter. 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. Brandon is on the Twitter, of course, as well, and you can follow him at 2 Morrow 23. You really seem to have a good time on the Twitter this season. You showed a real wry sense of humor, and it was you know, the there was a lot of back and forth between you and your teammates there.
Yeah, it was fun. You know, I don't think I embrace it maybe as much as some of the other guys. You know, I just don't wake up in the morning and decide to tweet what I'm having for breakfast,
right,
or things like that. I kind of wait for the right moment, or if we're just kind of having some banter, maybe sitting on the plane or whatever. And, you know, it just isn't really in the front of my mind. Like, I haven't been tweeting much. I don't think I've tweeted at all since the season has ended. But, you know, it's fun to tweet with the guys, and then we'll get some stuff going with the fans, and they're tweeting us when we're sitting on the plane or whatever. And that was kind of, those were kind of the most fun times I had with it.
Now, the highlight of the year on the post-game show on the Jays Talk was, of course, a Brandon Morrow moment. I don't know if it's ever happened before in the 10 years that I've been here, but your grandfather called us to sing your praises, and I thought that was particularly awesome. Have you had a chance to talk to him about that?
Yeah, I mentioned it to him. He likes to listen, of course. And I think they listen to you on the post game every night. So, you know, I don't know. I was kind of embarrassed that he would call in and do it, but whatever. That's cool.
All right. Well, I'm only saying good things.
That's right.
We'll get to the calls in a sec. But first, a question on tweet from M. Sharbat. He wants to know, Brandon, who in the starting rotation, and the starting rotation went through some changes this year, who's a class clown?
Cecil. Definitely Brett Cecil. He, you know, I don't know. There's just something about him. He's just kind of a funny guy. Just not only just making jokes, but maybe some of the stuff he does inadvertently, you know, tripping, or he's maybe a little clumsy around. But I think definitely I would have to tag Cecil with that.
Yeah, you definitely have to keep him away from sharp objects. There's no question about that. But he seems to get it as much as he gives it, too. I remember sitting in the dugout before a game one day, and one of your teammates came up to me and asked if I'd seen a plus-size lefty wandering around anywhere. So referring to Cecil. So I'm guessing he gets to be the butt of it a little bit, too.
Right. Oh, most definitely. Yeah, he's on both sides of it, but he can give it just as well as he can take it.
But with Brandon Morrow, let's get to your phone calls. Couple of lines still open at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell and long distance 1-888-666-0590 as we get you set for Game 6 of the World Series, the Rangers with a chance to close it out, Colby Lewis against Jaime Garcia. Mike is in Grimsby. Mike, you're going to lead things off. Say hello to Brandon Morrow.
Hey, Brandon. There's nothing to be embarrassed about, your grandpa calling in. I was there for that Jays talk, and that was one of the best interviews all year.
Well, good. I'm glad. Thank you.
My question is, coming up for the minors, have you ever hit a home run?
I have never had an at-bat in the minor leagues. I really only spent a month there in 2008 and then a month there in 2009, stretching out to start after I had relieved in Seattle. So I don't have any minor league at-bats.
Yeah, you're a guy who was... some might say rushed, pushed to the major leagues pretty quickly by the Seattle Mariners. But you've had 12 at-bats in the major leagues, still looking for that first knock, but you've only struck out 4 times, so that's good for a pitcher.
Yeah, not bad, I guess. I've only had 1 home run lifetime, though, so I'm not sure we're going to see any of those.
Are we talking about, like, lifetime ever at any
lifetime,
level of anything?
Like, I think it was, like, in All-Stars my last year of playing on the Little League field, so it's been a while.
When you played coming up before you were drafted, before high school, or maybe even in high school and college, I figure you were just a pitcher in college, but always, you know, big league pitchers were shortstops or whatever when they weren't pitching. Where did you play when you weren't pitching?
Oh, I was always a good fielder. Yeah, I played the infield, but hitting was never really my strong suit. Always a little undersized, you know, never really very strong. Until maybe my senior year of high school, I could put on a little bit of a show in BP, you know, relative to the other guys. So I did a little bit of hitting early in the season there until we decided that, you know, I'd probably just rather stick to pitching.
Do you agree with the notion, and I don't know what John Farrell's perspective is, but I know what Cito Gaston's perspective was on pitchers hitting, and it was basically treat you like you're a piece of glass. Just stand there and watch and don't do anything and don't hurt yourself. Would you like to let it rip, or do you want to just kind of get it over with and get back to the dugout and get ready to pitch?
No, well, I mean, we're trying to do a job up there. You know, we're trying to help the team. We're trying to help ourselves. You know, we got some guys in scoring position, but, you know, I don't think you're going to see anybody sprinting down the line 100% on the ground out to second base or anything like that. You know, there's always that, just because we're not used to those movements, you know, it's very rotational, different than pitching, and, you know, you swing too hard and miss or try and sprint coming out of the box. It's just something that we don't practice. So, you know, there's always that risk of injury, but we're also out there trying to win games and trying to help the team as best we can when we have to get in that situation.
Which, thankfully, is not that often. I don't know about you, but I'm not a fan of pitchers hitting in general. I think, you know, if they, in the National League, if they wanted to take the time to practice it and take BP every day and work at it so that, you know, 130 is a good hitting pitcher, I think I'd rather see a big strong guy get up there and take a few hacks.
Right, I think most fans would too, but, you know, it's just the way it's been, so, and I'm sure that's the way it'll continue to be.
No question about that. Brandon Morrow is with us. Let's go out to Whitby. Milt, say hello to Brandon.
Hey, Brandon, love watching you pitch, buddy.
All right, thanks, Milt.
One question I had for you. When you were growing up, I guess maybe in your teens, did you find yourself trying to emulate a professional pitcher?
You know, I watched a lot of the A's growing up, and when I was young and in high school, they had Barry Zito, Mark Mulder, and Tim Hudson. So those were the three guys that I probably watched a lot. I don't know if I ever tried to emulate anybody mechanically, but I would definitely say that I watched those guys pitch a lot, but I can't say that I ever tried to kind of copy somebody.
Who was your favorite growing up?
My favorite? I think I liked, say Mulder, I think, was my favorite growing up. He was a little bit more of a power pitcher.
Yeah,
than the other two.
The big lefty, Mulder, who didn't get one word of mention in the film Moneyball.
Well, yeah, mention. That's kind of funny. That, you know, they
didn't say his name at all.
The
whole
film was about the Moneyball, but they never really mentioned how the great pitching staff they had that ever got them to those, you know, playoffs.
Yeah, no, the only pitcher they really talked about in depth in that movie was Mike Magnanti. But it was a good movie. I liked the movie. Did you like the movie?
Yeah, no, I did too, yeah.
Yeah, excellent movie. Josh is in Kitchener. Hello, Josh.
Hi, Brandon, love watching your stuff. Thanks so much for all the strikeouts. Great to watch.
Yeah, thanks.
My question, I have two questions I thought of two. The first one is, who are you cheering for in the World Series? And my second one is, if and when, I guess when you make it to the World Series, which of those lineups would you rather pitch against, Texas or the Cardinals?
Well, I think I'm rooting for the Cardinals to win. I, you know, played with a few more guys on that team. I played with a couple guys on the Rangers, but I played with, you know, Zepp and then Dotel this year. I played with Arthur Rhodes in the past, and it'd be great to see him, you know, win a World Series after playing for so long. And then I played with Alan Craig for 3 years in college, who's been, you know, huge for him. So it's been really exciting to watch him play this year.
Is Beltre the only Ranger that you played with?
I played with Mark Lowe as well. I'm not sure if he's on the playoff roster, though. I haven't seen him.
Yeah, he pitched in Game 3.
Okay. Yeah, I played with Mark Lowe, who's a fellow diabetic. He was diagnosed when I was with Seattle, actually.
Wow. I had no idea. So there's at least three of you in the major leagues and two on the same team with Dustin McGowan. First diabetic I ever heard of pitching in the big leagues was Jason Johnson with the Orioles. You keep an eye out?
Yeah, I don't know if I could name anybody before that, but he was definitely one of the first I remember. And he pitched, I wear a insulin pump as well, but I don't pitch with it on. I think he pitched with it on. He had, you know, got like a exemption from the MLB to be able to wear it during the game.
Yeah, I remember he started an opening day against the Blue Jays, I don't know, sometime in the last 10 years. And there were a whole bunch of stories on the pump and on the way he had to use it. And it was a big revelation back then. You have a pump the rest of the time. And I don't know, is it something you keep an eye on, the other diabetics in the big leagues? Or if Jason Johnson's the first guy you'd heard of too, then there really wasn't anybody growing up for you to look at for inspiration. But it's something that's it's another hurdle to overcome.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I didn't really necessarily grow up with it. I guess I was diagnosed at 18 and then in the big leagues at 22. So it wasn't, you know, that much time in between to really look around and look up to somebody. But he was playing, you know, when I was diagnosed. And so, you know, that was definitely a positive aspect to look at, that, you know, hey, there's, you know, major leaguer playing right there, right in front of you.
I got to ask you, while we're on the topic, about Dustin McGowan. And obviously, you know, he's not a guy I don't think that you know especially well, because he's been rehabbing pretty much the whole time you've been with the Blue Jays. But his 3 years out and his slow return and the setback after setback, people were saying, yeah, there's shoulder issues and there's this. But also, when you have diabetes, you're healing a lot slower and it takes more time, and it can really get in the way of stuff like that. Can you shed any light on that sort of thing?
You know, I don't know. I can't really speak on his experiences, but for myself, you know, it's hard to compare that because I, you know, don't have anything to compare it to. I don't know how my body would recover or feel without it, but I don't know that I can say that I really feel at a disadvantage. You know, I feel like I recover as well as anybody, that I feel like on my fifth day when I'm ready to pitch that I've recovered 100%, that I'm ready to go, you know, and that it really hasn't had any effect on that, especially when, you know, you're diligent and you're checking your sugars and you're doing all the work in between to keep you there.
And we go again. There goes the runner. The pitch, swing and a miss. He struck him out on a fastball. Brandon Morrow, a complete game, 1-0 shutout. He tosses a one-hitter, wins his ninth game, and gets mobbed by his teammates at the mound, and he finishes with a flourish, his 17th strikeout.
It is the Blue Jay Day pregame show. We're getting you set for Game 6 of the World Series, and our guest is Brandon Morrow, taking your phone calls. And, Brandon, I'm sure you have some vague memories of that game against the Tampa Bay Rays last year.
Mm-hmm, of course.
People talk about being in the zone and just, you know, working seamlessly and having everything go right. How much of the case was it that day when you thoroughly dominated the team? You came within a weak hit ground ball of a no-hitter, struck out 17, and I'm sure you're aware of this, but by there's a stat called the game score, and I know that you've mentioned nerd stats in the past, but by game score, that was the fourth best game ever pitched in Major League history.
Well, see, when you say that, I don't know how they calculate that when there's been, you know, 19 perfect games or 20.
Strikeouts matter a lot, I think, in the
right. It's I'm sure it's weighed more heavily on that. I don't know if you can say it's a better pitch game than a perfect game where you don't allow any base runners. Where I had 3 base runners.
Well, Kerry Wood's 20 strikeout game, by the way, is tops on that list. Bill James made it up. You get a point for every out, 3 points. Just a point for every out, 2 points for every inning after the fourth, a point for every strikeout. You lose 2 for a hit. You lose 4 for an earned run. You lose 2 for an unearned run, and you lose 1 for a walk. So, yeah, strikeouts are weighted very heavily.
Right.
And if you only give up 1 hit, it's not so bad.
Well, yeah. Yeah, you know, we still won 1-0, so that's, right. That's the important thing, right?
Right. So how in the zone were you that day? How, did it feel different than your other starts?
Oh, well, I mean, I knew I had good stuff that day. I came out and felt great. You know, I had all the – well, I really only needed the two pitches that day. Fastball and slider were pretty much probably I threw 90% of the time. I remember throwing a lot of sliders, but I was throwing it for strikes, throwing it in the dirt when I needed to. And even if, you know, I wasn't trying to throw it to a specific location and I missed, it was, you know, still working out for me in another spot, so – yeah, I mean, I felt like I was in the zone as much as you could be, definitely.
We had a great time watching it, I got to tell you. Second segment with Brandon Morrow means less of me, more of you guys, so let's get right to it. Alan in Toronto, you're on with Brandon Morrow.
Hi, Brandon. You were absolutely lights out last year, July the 17th to August the 28th. You just dominated. You were 5-0 with a .291 earned run average and a .191. You held your opponents to .191 average, struck out 63 and 43 in a third innings. That August the 8th game where you pitched that one hitter, what is it like from the sixth inning on? Does anybody say anything to you, or do they remain silent? I'm sure you were aware that you had a no-hitter, and I guess your heart fell in your hands when Longoria hit that infield single. But what was it like during those last few innings leading up to that one hitter?
Well, I mean, not too different for me, I guess. I just sit on the bench and kind of do my thing, stretch a little bit and wait in between. But you can see people around you starting to get nervous. I think that when it's yourself kind of in the middle of it, you don't get as nervous or as anxious. You're just kind of in that zone like we had just talked about, and you know, it's still just a game to you, and you're just competing where the other people around you, and I've been in this spot where I'm on the bench and somebody's throwing a great game, and you know, you're feeling more nervous for the game than maybe if you were out there pitching, like I just said. So you know, it doesn't really change that much for me. Obviously, you know, throwing a no-hitter, there's scoreboards everywhere. It's hard to get away from it. And, you know, in your head, you've obviously known that you haven't given up any hits, just keeping kind of track of what's going on in your head, of course. And but I wouldn't say a whole lot changes. You know, you're just going out there and, you know, just like you were the first five or six innings, you're just giving it your all the last couple.
Thanks for the call, Alan. We move to Kevin in Toronto. Hello, Kevin.
Hi. I want to start off by saying, Brandon, big fan. I was at your one-hitter last year. You had a really up-and-down year, and you ended on a real high note. And I was wondering what you did, what did you change at the end of the year that gave you such great final three starts, and how to maintain that over your career?
Yeah, I think it was just an aggressiveness with all my pitches. And that doesn't really mean that I was trying to throw them harder or anything like that. Just be more aggressive in the zone with my off-speed stuff. Throw in my curveball a little bit more to mix speeds. And where earlier I may have taken a little bit off of those pitches thinking that I needed to throw a slower curveball, where maybe I just needed to throw a few more. And that's something that we had talked about and worked on, is finding a pitch that's going to allow me to change the speed that the hitter is seeing as my fastball and slider are not that too far off. So they would sit on a hard speed where then you mix it in with a curveball, it's slow, gets them out in front. And then also I started mixing in the cutter, which I think is going to be a big pitch for me next year, as it was kind of well documented at the end of the season. I'd only had one ground ball double play all year, and it actually happened to come on a cutter on the second game that I had used it. So that's a good sign. I think, you know, I got to the end of bat against righties a lot with it and into a lot of lefties with it. So I think that's going to be a big pitch for me, and just continuing to mix speeds with that curveball and be aggressive with everything.
Did it bother you that you hadn't induced a ground ball double play until September, that it was getting near the end of the season? People were talking about the major league record. I mean, for me, it had a lot to do with luck, too. I mean, I remember seeing you get a ground ball with a runner on first and two out a few times. And you know, a ground ball that would have been a double play that gets through. And there were a lot of situations where it was circumstantial more than anything else. But did you even think about it, or would you have known if stupid people like us hadn't kept bringing it up to you?
Well, yeah, actually, you know, I was probably one of the first people to realize it, you know, because it's, you know, they're my games, and I just kind of didn't remember getting one at some point and looked it up, and I hadn't got one. Yeah, and I think luck has a lot to do with it. I'm not necessarily a ground ball pitcher, but, you know, fly ball pitchers get their double plays too. And, yeah, there's some luck involved where somebody just didn't hit a rocket right to the shortstop and he, you know, flips it to second for an easy double play, or someone gets jammed on an inside fastball and they roll it up. You know, there's just crazy stuff that happens in baseball, and that's, you know, kind of one of those things that happened for, you know, 5.5 months of the year.
And I think your streak was something like the fourth or fifth longest of all time. But two of the guys ahead of you are in the Hall of Fame, so it doesn't really necessarily have anything to do with the quality of a pitcher either.
Right. Well, I mean, I hope not.
No question about it. You got nine of them last year, and just the one this year. Gord is in Waterloo. Gord, say hello to Brandon Morrow.
Hello, Brandon Morrow.
Gord, how's it going?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good.
I had a question, and I think it sort of ties into the question of the last caller. And I wanted to ask about the games where you were having a bit more trouble and you were getting, unfortunately, hit hard on occasion. You listen to the commentators on TV and less so on the radio, and the comments just generally seem to be, you know, it's all location, it falls up, catching too much of the plate. On the days that you've had less success in the last season, was it just as simple as that, or was there more to it?
Well, I don't think it was all that. I'm sure there was a couple days where that may have been the determining factor, but you see guys get away with poor location all the time, you know, and that comes, and they get away with that because they've mixed speeds with their pitches, which is something that maybe I wasn't doing as well in those games, and which I just talked about with mixing in the curveball, which is my slowest pitch by a good margin. So when we started doing that, I think it started to, you know, open up that leeway for a little bit more error where you can get the fastball to the back of the swing, and they're just kind of a little bit in between more, instead of just sitting on that kind of 90-mile-an-hour speed where my fastball is going to be anywhere usually between 92 and 97, and my sliders, you know, 87 to 90. So it's really not that big of a speed difference. And then drop in a couple curveballs at, you know, 81 or 82, and that's kind of a big difference.
I have to ask you about the philosophy, and we hear it all the time on broadcasts from the people who, you know, the analysts who played the game, and they always say, don't get beat on your third best pitch. And the question that I have is, so well, when are you going to use it then? I mean, obviously fastball and slider are the two biggest weapons for you. So when do you pick out that time to throw in a curveball here and there?
Right, and I think that had a lot to do with it. When I had a little bit of struggles early, then I said, you know, I'm not going to get beat on that third best pitch, and I started throwing a lot of sliders and a lot of fastballs. And you know, I needed to get back to mixing in those slower pitches. And usually, I'll use my curveball early in the count, where a lot of guys, especially with the runners on base, will be sitting on a first pitch fastball. They'll be really hunting that. You know, guys bear down with guys on base. Mm-hmm. You know, they smell that RBI out there, and a lot of guys just get better in those situations. So that's when you know, they gear themselves up for that. And when there's a slider that's, you know, especially if I'm trying to break it off nasty, throw it hard, it's 89 miles an hour, they can still get the bat to that, because even if they're hitting fastball, then they don't have to adjust that much, whereas if I throw a curveball up there, that's a much bigger adjustment to have to make.
Absolutely. We have time for one more call. Barry is in Toronto. Barry, say hello to Brandon Moore.
Hey, Brandon. Great end of the year last year. My question for you is, we've seen a lot of new pitchers last year. If you were John Farrell next year, who would be your starting five?
Oh, wow. Well, Ricky, of course, and I'd have to put myself in there. And then I think, Henderson Alvarez definitely proved that he has the ability to pitch here, and I think he's going to be great. You know, he's, probably, like we just said, he's had more double plays in an inning than I had all year. He's just got that great ability to get the ground ball that guys just cannot hit his ball in the air for whatever reason, and that's an outstanding quality to have. So I think he'll be in there. I think you got to give Brett the benefit of the doubt. He's had a couple rough stretches this year, like myself, but pitched great for us the year before. And when he's on, he's as good as anybody. And then number five, I think is open. I think Dustin McGowan probably has the edge on that. And Kyle's going to be in the mix, and Brad Mills, and probably a couple other guys. So that's kind of the tough call.
Yeah, Dustin has. You would think you would have to have the edge simply because he's out of options, if for no other reason. But
right.
You got Drabek. You've got, like you said, Mills, Villanueva. Maybe Jesse Litch will be in on that. Although Jesse seemed to really take to the bullpen pretty well.
Yeah, he really did. I mean, some people, it's just that extra little adrenaline coming out and getting it going. He did a great job for us out of the bullpen.
Now, you put yourself in the starting rotation, and I would put you in the starting rotation, too, without question. But people obviously look at your stuff. The Mariners did and tried you as a closer for a while. I get a lot of phone calls over the course of the post games during the season saying, Brandon Morrow should be the Blue Jays closer. My answer is always, look, he's been starting for 2 years, and you don't want to lose the 200 quality innings so that you can get 55, 60 strong innings at the back of the bullpen. Do you now see yourself as a starting pitcher, having done both things in the big leagues?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, starting is where you're going to get the most value out of your guys, and I think nearly everybody would agree on that aspect. People just seem to, when there's a couple blown saves, people just seem to panic or whatever, and they want to make changes. And, I guess you can, run me out there for an inning and it's all, thunder and lightning, and it would be fun. And it was fun relieving, but I think, you get your, you get the most value out of starting. And I think that the way I've been working the last couple of years, and I think I'm just moving closer and closer to becoming, that pitcher that, myself and everybody else thinks that I will be.
Yeah, and certainly all of us think you will be. And you look at this Blue Jays team, and you guys can outstuff anybody. And, if you take that next step and Henderson Alvarez continues, Ricky seems to really have established himself. And once Kyle Drabek hits the ground running, there's more stuff on this team than maybe any other rotation in the big league.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. You gotta look at that. Ricky's obviously established himself as the ace and as a league ace with the numbers he put up this year and last year. So consistent and so good. He's outstanding. Kyle and myself are very similar. In how we've struggled. I struggled with the throwing strikes early in my career, and it's just something that, a lot of power pitchers struggle with. And Henderson has, like I just said, has obviously shown the ability to get an amazing number of ground balls, and that's just something, you can't teach, and it's just, he's got unbelievable stuff of throwing, bowling balls up there at 94, 95 miles an hour.
It is pretty impressive. Brandon, I appreciate your time, and thank you so much. And it was great having you on. The tradition on this program is to pick out a stat, and it is generally, well, maybe not one of the nerd stats, but one of the situational stats, to tell you that may shed some positive light for you on your year. And there are two things that leap out at me when I look at your breakdown. The first is how you performed in late and close situations, which is seventh inning or later with your team tied up by one, or with a batting team tied up by one, or with the tying run at least on deck. And in those situations, 25 plate appearances against you, you gave up 4 hits, all singles, and you only walked 2. So a 174 batting average against in late and close situations. And then with the bases loaded, you had 18 batters come to the plate against you this year with the bases loaded. You gave up 1 single in those 18 plate appearances, and you walked 1. So you talk about hitters getting geared up when they smell that RBI. That's pretty huge to be able to do that with nowhere to put a guy.
Yeah, man, where did all my runs come from, man?
We don't have to get into that stuff.
No, we'll stick to that. We'll stick to us.
But that's good stuff, and it's, you know, it was a better year than last year, and we hope that next year is a better year than this year, and that you continue to go onward and upward, because everybody certainly loves the way things are coming together here in Toronto, and we expect that you'll be a big part of it when it does get to the ultimate postseason goal.
That's right. That's the goal.
All right, Brandon. Thanks so much. Have a wonderful off season. We'll see you in spring training.
All right. Thanks, guys.